Hey there everyone, before we get into the show, I just want to shamelessly self-promote coffee.com/mystarwarslifedebt. You can join up as a member, you can do a one-off donation, or you can pick up some of our digital stuff on the merch store, which is right there on coffee.com/mystarwarslifedebt. So, please head on over there, check it out if you want to support the show and the podcast. Thank you very much, guys. Now, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to the Life Debt Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Orme. And today we're going to take a look at the last couple of weeks of blog posts after last week's episode where I did a full-on review catch-up on the new Jedi Order, ready for this week, because one of the posts is the next book in the new Jedi Order series, Star by Star. Also taking a look at The High Republic, The Battle of Jeddah. My Mandoverse rewatch part 2, The Mandalorian season 2, and another trip to the collection corner, Obi-Wan's Jedi Starfighter LEGO review. But before we do that, let's hit some business. You can visit the blog at www.mystarwarslifedebt.com. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/lifedebtblogpod. Follow me on Twitter at BloodyOrme, BloodyOrme. Instagram.com/mystarwarslifedebt, and if you would like to send me an email, you can do so at lifedebtpodcast@outlook.com. And as you heard in the ad earlier, we do have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/mystarwarslifedebt, or you can donate as well to My Star Wars Life Debt at ko-fi.com/mystarslifedebt. So, without further ado, enough of the shameless self-promotion. For now, let's get on with the show. First up, we've got my Mandoverse rewatch part 2, The Mandalorian season 2. In the run-up to The Mandalorian season 3, I attempted a rewatch of both seasons of The Mandalorian as well as The Book of Boba Fett, but ended up having life getting in the way, and my attempt was unsuccessful. However, I have continued the rewatch, and I've decided to put some of my thoughts down on digital paper. By far, season 2 is, so far, my favourite entry in the Mandoverse. It successfully builds on season 1, answers questions left over, makes us ask even more questions, and integrates the Mandalorian even deeper into the overall story of the galaxy far, far away, by bringing in established characters from the animated shows, and even the novels. This season wastes no time. Every episode pushes the main plot forward, even if it seems tangential, of Din finding a Jedi to train Grogu, and in his quest to find a Jedi, he meets some familiar and very welcome faces. First up, in the first episode, we get the perfectly cast Timothy Oliphant as Marshal Cobb Vanth. Fans of Chuck Wendig's Aftermath trilogy know the character from a series of interludes throughout the trilogy, a man who acquires a familiar set of Mandalorian armour from some Jawas, and leads a revolution in a town on Tatooine, freeing it from the gang that has moved in. Why is it perfect casting? Just look at Oliphant's body of work. He's played a western style sheriff in two different series, Deadwood and Justified, and he's able to play the right level of humour that benefits Star Wars without coming across like a parody. And then in the third episode we get the live action introduction of Bo-Katan Kryze, former member of Death Watch and leader of the Night Owls, who was introduced in The Clone Wars, played by Katie Sackhoff, who makes the jump with the character into live action, making it a seamless transition. And then following that, we get Rosario Dawson's guest spot, taking on the role of Anakin Skywalker's former Padawan, Ahsoka Tano, who follows up in the fifth episode, after she had been fan cast on Lanyard's prior. Her take on the character followed in the footsteps of the animated version of the character, and Dawson's obvious commitment to making the animated and live action work together seamlessly is instantly apparent in everything the character does in the episode. Online detractors kicked off as they do about the length of the Montrails, but you know, it's her first appearance in live action. They were testing things out. A return of a fan favourite character and his new sidekick, who is also familiar, make their appearance in the next episode. Boba Fett and Fennec Shand join Din Djarin in an action spectacle directed by Robert Rodriguez. The end of the episode brings Mando's world crashing down around him, Grogu taken by Moff Gideon and his Dark Troopers, and the Razor Crest destroyed. Oh my goodness, I cannot speak. The Razor Crest destroyed. Luckily, Boba and Fennec joined the crew, with Cara Dune, who is now a Marshal of the New Republic, and Miggs Mayfeld, released from prison by Cara, to locate Gideon's ship in the 7th episode. It was the 7th episode that really changed my opinion of the 6th episode of Season 1. Rick Famuyiwa, who wrote and directed both episodes, really made an unlikable character like Mayfeld into one who you not only end up rooting for, but you want to see come back again and again. The scene where he and Mando are having a drink with Imperial Officer Hess to help maintain their cover is a masterclass in screen tension. And it changed Bill Burr, in my opinion, from a comedian having a good time in a Star Wars episode into one of the best guest stars in the franchise's history. And then the final episode of the season may very well be the best of the whole series. It has everything. Action, adventure, humour, emotional stakes, conflict, resolution, a hallway fight, and one of the most beautiful scenes in all of Star Wars, when Din Djarin removes his helmet to say goodbye to Grogu as he's about to go with Luke Skywalker, whose introduction into the series has got to be one of the best entrances to learn to be a Jedi. The final episode really solidifies the Mandalorian-Grogu relationship. It's been growing stronger this whole season, but it's in this episode that their father-son bond really shines. It's here that we fully realise the love they have for each other. It's incredibly touching, and seeing Grogu leave to train with Luke is so heartbreaking as Mando watches them go. The love in Pedro Pascal's eyes in that moment only enhances the performance of the Grogu puppet, and the makers have really looked at how great Mark Hamill played against the Yoda puppet in the original trilogy and used that as a basis for how the actor in the Mando suit, because there are at least 3 people it could be, interacts with Grogu, even under the helmet. And through a haze of tears, because if you don't cry at the end of this episode, you truly are a monster, we get to see what happens to Boba and Fennec after their time with Mando in a post-credit scene that brings us a wonderful returning set and sets up the next part of the Mandoverse, the Book of Boba Fett. Overall, for me, this season is the one to hold the rest up to. It has such a rich tapestry of stories that flow together seamlessly, and really pushed the Din Djarin Grogu character arcs to the inevitable conclusion. Remember at the time wondering how a third season would work, and of course we got season 2.5 with the Book of Boba Fett, which told part of their story. But that's for another post, altogether. So, The Battle of Jeddah, The High Republic, by George Mann Review. The second part of the High Republic Wave 2, Phase 2, is The Battle of Jeddah, the latest Star Wars audio drama, this time written by George Mann, who has previously written a number of Star Wars books and stories, who has also been a frequent collaborator of Kevin Scott, who has also authored 2 of the 3 previous Star Wars audio dramas, and one of the architects of the High Republic. The Battle of Jeddah continues the story started in Convergence and Path of Deceit, with the signing of the peace treaty between Irem and Erinone due to take place as the holy city prepares for its festival of balance, with numerous force-worshipping sects gathering, including the Path of the Open Hand, whose disdain for the Jedi leads them to unleash a horror that targets force users, and a bombing of the signing of the peace treaty leads to the two delegations to bring the interplanetary war to the streets of Jeddah City. It falls to a group of Jedi, Croton's son and Aida Forte, who have been tasked with the assistance and protection of the Irem and Erinone delegates. A Jedi Master, Solandra Sho, who is also on a pilgrimage, is tasked with the investigation of the initial attack. And finally, Keth Serapa, a member of the Church of the Force, to get to the bottom of the bombing and figure out what is starting to kill Force users so that peace can be restored. At around 5.5 hours, Man really crams a lot into what you could consider a short space of time, but at no point does the story feel rushed, and each of the characters, of which there are many, gets a moment to shine. This story really brings the duplicitous nature of the Path of the Open Hand to light. The Mother either manipulates events to suit her needs, or sets up the situations to let the Path shine, eventually garnering enough support from the locals that her sect grows in popularity within the streets of Jeddah, causing animosity towards the Jedi. The Battle of Jeddah is really a Star Wars detective story, expanding on this aspect of the Jedi's responsibilities, as well as being protectors. The Jedi as a detective is an idea we visited before in Attack of the Clones, where Obi-Wan investigates the assassination attempts on Padme, which leads him to find the clones on Kamino. Getting to see the Jedi in this role is pretty exciting for me. I have a soft spot for The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler, so getting something remotely like a film noir in Star Wars is something pretty exciting for me. And I once attempted a fanfic, a story about a Jedi undertaking a missing persons case in that style, but didn't get very far. Getting to experience Jeddah in its prime is an interesting experience. The Holy City certainly feels understandably different from what we got in Rogue One. Here, the planet isn't embroiled in the battle between the Empire and Saw Gerrera's partisans. Yes, it does become a war zone within the time frame of the story, but we get to learn a bit more about the place before the battle. We even get to see the Guardians of the Wills in action, when they were a force to be reckoned with and not in disarray like when we meet Chirrut and Baze in Rogue One. The battle caused by operatives put in place by the Mother is between Irem and Erinone, whose fragile peace rests on the edge of a vibroblade, and in the lead up to the signing of the peace treaty. In this inevitable continuation from Convergence, and undoubtedly will continue to play a part in the conclusion of the next book, Cataclysm, which I'm very much looking forward to getting on Audible in the near future.
Hi, I'm Guy. I have quadriplegic cerebral palsy, and Johnny is one of my carers. Please help me and sign up to bitrom.com/mystarwarslifedebt so he can stop talking about Star Wars to me. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you.
So let's head on over to Collection Corner for Obi-Wan Kenobi's Jedi Starfighter LEGO review. Way back when, in the olden days, well, 2002, I successfully tracked down, because for some reason it was really hard to find at the time, a LEGO set from the new Attack of the Clones range, and it was the Jedi Starfighter. In years since, there have been a few updated sets, but not one that I've liked the look of, but I'm not including Anakin's Starfighter there, only talking about the Attack of the Clones version. The last one that came with the hyperspace ring, in my opinion, looked not so great. So of course, my interest was piqued when this set one was released. The set comes with three numbered bags, the instruction booklet and a sticker sheet. The first bag builds the core of the ship, including some of the cockpit interior and the engines. Whilst bag two builds one side of the ship, adds more to the middle portion, and adds the seat to the cockpit, which in and of itself is a pretty ingenious yet very simple design. And bag 3 finishes the ship off with the second wing, as well as finishing off the middle part and the cockpit. We get three minifigures in this set. A new Obi-Wan Kenobi with Jedi Road details painted on. And he comes with the prerequisite lightsaber, of course, and also both a hairpiece and a hood. His head is double-sided, one side with his comm unit printed on for when he's flying, and the other without. R4-P17 is the ship's astromech droid. In the film, R4 is built into the ship, but the set comes with a body for the droid, which can be hidden away inside the centre part of the build. The nice addition to this set, which is the first time that I've seen it at least, is the rotating piece that R4's dome attaches to, which allows a nice little play feature, which has the head swiveling. The third minifig is Tornway, the Kaminoan who shows Obi-Wan around Topoka City. This is the first time we've had a Kaminoan minifig, and I've got to say, the mould for the head looks pretty good. This new mould could also open up a whole world of opportunities to have Kaminoan characters, like Nala Say, included in upcoming The Bad Batch sets, if they make any more sets from that series. The finished ship is beautiful. It's sleek, it's swooshable, and it's by far the best looking of the Jedi Starfighter sets thus far. And the minifigs are also great additions. The set does have a couple of play features. There are two of the new stud launchers, which I'm still on the fence about in terms of their size, but that's just because for me they feel a bit too bulky for this ship. And as I already mentioned, the rotating R4 dome, and an added extra, the buildable radar dish, which attaches to a stud so minifig Obi-Wan can contact Coruscant, courtesy of the old folks home. At 280 pieces for an RRP of 30 quid, the set does initially seem overpriced. However, looking at it now, built and with the minifigures, the price seems quite fair. Granted, now it's getting discounted online close to 25, which is what I paid, but in hindsight, I would have happily paid the full whack. So yes, a great little set. Now let's head on to the next part. Here it is, folks. The New Jedi Order, Star by Star by Troy Denning Review. As the New Jedi Order series reaches its midpoint, the galaxy is in utter turmoil. A new weapon, the genetically engineered Voxen, a force-sensitive monster that hunts Jedi, are being created and used by the Yuuzhan Vong to wipe out the Jedi. Anakin Skywalker. Sorry, no, Anakin Solo. Ugh. Anakin Solo leads a strike team into the heart of Vong territory to wipe out the Voxen Queen and eradicate the threat. Meanwhile, Tsvong La drives the Yuuzhan Vong army into the heart of the New Republic, Coruscant. I originally read Star by Star in 2002, loaned to me by a friend who had also borrowed it from his local library. And like the strike team, my getting it read was a race against time, but I managed it. So the death of Chewie in the first book of the series, Vector Prime, was meant to make us think that there were real stakes, that the Yuuzhan Vong were a massive threat to our heroes, and whilst their path of destruction through the series thus far has been catastrophic, it wasn't until this book that the stakes really, truly felt real. Star by Star features the biggest loss of the series after Chewbacca, with Anakin Solo sacrificing himself to allow his team to continue their mission while distracting a legion of Vong warriors. And whilst heroic, it is an act that will have repercussions long after the conclusion of this series. And with the disappearance of Jason Solo at the hands of Vergeer, the Jedi have lost two of their best members. Troy Denning crafts an amazing novel full of action and adventure, and as I stated before, incredibly high stakes for all our heroes. With Anakin's strike team being picked off one by one as they make their way through a dilapidated world ship to complete their mission, Luke and Mara, with the help of some new Jedi allies, must try to capture a living Yamask, whilst trying to maintain the Jedi base's secret location and then help defend the capital. There was a lot more to the book than what I could remember from reading it years ago. In my head, the bulk of the story was about the strike team, and whilst that plotline is the main focus, there's still so much more to it. In my mind, the battle for Coruscant was barely even a blip. However, and thankfully, it gets quite a lot of focus. One aspect of the plot that I had completely forgotten is the political subplot and the complete and utter disintegration of the New Republic, all thanks to the machinations by the Yuuzhan Vong sympathiser and agent, Viki Sesh. I can imagine that back in the day that this plotline wouldn't have held my interest, but as I've been making my way through the series, Viki Sesh's storyline has been interesting and well portrayed, with her actions in Star by Star revealing her true allegiance as she tries to further manipulate the Senate against both Velaya and the Jedi. Star by Star is, without a doubt, one of the crown jewels of not only the New Jedi Order, but so far in my reading, of the whole of the Legends timeline. And it will definitely be hard to top. So, let's check in on my week in Star Wars. Not a lot, really. Well, kind of a lot. Some. I've blasted through the Star Wars Brotherhood audiobook by Mike Chen. Got the review for that written. That is coming out next week. And I have binged the Book of Boba Fett, ready for me to write up my Mandoverse rewatch thoughts on it. Finished Star by Star, obviously, in the last, I finished that last week, and I've started the next part of The New Jedi Order, Dark Journey by Elaine Cunningham. And I've also started Cataclysm, the third, quote-unquote, adult High Republic Phase 2 novel. I think that's it, really. Not really done any Star Wars-y stuff with the kids, unfortunately, mainly because I haven't had the time. Gonna have to try and be super dad a little bit after Emma fell off a bench and landed on her head and has had to go to A&E a couple of times. Turns out she's got post-concussive syndrome, so basically she's off school for a bit because she's, head's all whappy after being banged around by a concrete floor. But aside from that, she's fine. So, she's alright. Which is good. I'm carrying on. I've just hit season 2 of my Clone Wars rewatch. There won't be any posts about that. I'm not blogging on that one. Seeing as I did a very extensive series of posts about a previous Clone Wars rewatch, but needless to say, I am enjoying it. And of course, we got those release dates: May 22nd, 2026, December 18th, 2026, and December 17th, 2027 for the Daisy Ridley New Jedi Order, Dave Filoni's Mandoverse film, and James Mangold's 25,000 Years Before A New Hope, Discovery of the Force. Whether or not those release dates will be adhered to, not that I don't think they'll be able to manage to get stuff made by then, if the right it's basically dates have moved because of the writer's strike. Although the proximity of the release dates seems a little off, you know, 6 months between two of the films. I mean, I don't think that was an issue with Last Jedi and Solo. I do and I don't. I think Solo should have been pushed till the December. That's just my thoughts on it. There was too many other films out around Solo. It was kind of the last one of like the big push around May that year. Of so you had like, what was it, one of the Avengers, and I think it was Avengers Endgame or Infinity War, couldn't remember which, and then Deadpool 2. You know, those two films were massive, and then Solo kind of just glided on in there, sauntered for a bit and glided back out. So, you know, these, but also because of Star Wars being released three Christmases in a row, were people not expecting it in May, so they kind of didn't take notice? I don't know. I do wonder about those two 2026 films. But we'll see. We will see. Anyway, that was my week in Star Wars. So, before I go, just remember you can find me on facebook.com/lifedeadblogpod. Follow me on Twitter @bloodyorm. Hit me up on Instagram, instagram.com/mystarwarslifedead. Visit the blog at www.mystarwarslifedead.com. Email me, send me emails, get on the show. Send those over to lifedeadpodcast@outlook.com. And if you'd like to support the blog and the podcast, you can do so over at Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/mystarwarslifedead, or at patreon.com/mystarwarslifedead. So without further ado, thank you for listening. I will speak to you next week. Punch it. Chewie.